A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello one and all, and welcome to Behind the Glass, your weekly automotive podcast hosted by two rather uninformed enthusiasts.
Nah.
I'm Sam from the YouTube channel Seen Through Glass.
Oh, I'm Tony from Gravelwood Car Sales.
And you can watch us each week on YouTube. You can also listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and most podcast players. We hope you enjoy the episode. Now, I do have a confession to make. We have a confession to make. Our live viewers from Recast will know already that this episode was actually recorded about 10 days ago.
At least.
At least. And I wanted to clear that up. I wanted to get that out there early on.
Yeah.
Because sometimes when we've done this in the past, we've said things that have then become dated very quickly.
They're not relevant anymore.
So I'm worried that we're going to chat about something in this episode and people are going to be like, what are they on about? Like, do they not read the news? But yeah, it's because essentially, well, things are getting a little bit hectic over the next 6 weeks or so. Tony, by the time you're listening or watching this, is probably already on his Euro trip that he's been planning for a while.
You heard
us talk about it this year on the podcast. But I am on a massive adventure. Actually, over the next 6 weeks, maybe even 2 months, I'm basically going to be a bit of a Shmi 150 and not go home. I'm just living out on the road.
Living out your suitcase.
I worked out, mate, over the next 2 weeks, or the next 10 days or like that, I'm going to do 7,500 miles on the road.
Not in one of your old cars?
In the 360 and the GT3.
Really?
Yep.
In both cars?
Across both cars, 7,500 miles in 10 days.
You love depreciation, don't you?
I love it. I mean, surely I cannot depreciate my 360 any further. Like, no. It's
or,
at rock
or
bottom.
That GT3. Don't be rude. The way you spec'd it.
Well, it's now gone from like 250 to 230. Surely, on the used market.
Pennies, yeah.
So if you follow me on Instagram, I guess I would have already started posting this. I'm doing the podium tours rally. Obviously Podium Place, the legends that make the coffee, Seen Through Glass coffee. Uh-huh. They do these tours. So taking the GT3 to the Nürburgring. That'd be super exciting.
That's a crash?
I mean, definitely a crash. I'm actually terrified. So recording this in advance of that trip and I'm really pooing myself. But then I'm setting off in the 360 on a really epic adventure.
Hold on a minute. Hold on. I can't let you get away with this. What? So you're going to be in the GT3. How are you going to swap cars?
Okay, so... If you really want to know the logistics...
I do, yeah.
So...
Oh, it's an advance now.
GT3 goes from Podium Place in Newbury... through, I think we're doing Belgium, Luxembourg, Nürburgring, whatever. That's the Podium Tours rally.
Lovely.
I then leave the rally and I drive it straight down to Monaco. And I'm dropping off at some a storage location just outside Monaco.
Leave it there.
And I fly back to the UK.
Lovely.
Pick up the 360.
Yep.
Which I'm then driving down to Spain because I'm going to meet you.
We're going to come find me.
We're going to do a podcast episode from Spain.
We might have to do two.
Who knows? I then take it on. And I'm just trying to think my posting schedule. I'm going to take on a big adventure. I feel like I would have revealed it by now. Essentially, a sandy adventure.
Let's just leave it at
that. So big, big adventure, crossing into a continent that I haven't actually crossed into with a 360 yet before. So that's going to be very exciting. New continent, nice. Took that off. Then it goes back up into Portugal for the Maranello Legacy event happening in Porto.
Uh-huh.
Which will be super cool. That's like a three-day extravaganza. They shut down all the roads, big supercar convoys.
Lovely.
Then I drive the 360, this is the craziest part, from Porto to London in 1 day.
Good luck with that, by the way.
And then I drop off the 360, pick up the Range Rover Sport, which has been very kindly lent to me by Range Rover, and drive it straight down to Monaco, where I then...
The next day, or you're going to have a little rest? Or
next day. So I drive 360 from Porto to London, get straight in the Range Rover and drive straight to Monaco.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, death. I mean, absolute death.
And that's 7,500 miles, or what you've just said.
So all that I've just said is totals up to being 7,500 miles. The majority of it, obviously, is in the 360. It's about 5,000 miles in the 360 and about 2,500 miles in the GT3. But yeah, and then I'll be in Monaco for about 3.5 weeks with the Range Rover Sport and the GT3. Load of different content. Monaco F1's happening. Lake Como, Concours d'Elegance, whatever they call that. That's happening, which I'm going to try and get across to. There's loads of stuff going on. Obviously, I want to take the GT3 on some proper roads. There's a launch of a new car. I don't think I can say much more about it, but it's from a British brand that has associations with a top secret spy.
Oh, no.
I'm not going to say more than that. I'll let you make your guesses. So, yeah, it's absolutely insane. I'm super excited, but it means the next couple of months are just going to be hectic. And
you're not going to bed, are you?
I'm not going to bed. My wife, Vicky, and the baby are coming to meet me, and they're going to be in Monaco as well. But yeah, it essentially means that for the podcast, we're having to do a lot of pre-recorded episodes because Tony and I aren't going to always be together over the weeks ahead. So we're doing a couple today that are going to be dripped out of the next few weeks. So as I say, they could sometimes be a little bit out of date. Then we're going to link up and do one in Spain whilst Tony's there on a road trip. And then Tony's actually going to come down to Monaco to meet me there. Paul's also supposedly going to be there. So we might be doing a car park track episode from Monaco. It's going to be a lot.
Yeah.
In terms of our live streams, for those of you that love to join us on our live stream, and today we've got a whole load of people. Max has joined us Ross. We had, was it Cameron from Australia? So yeah, loads of great live viewers. Stay tuned. Keep an eye on the recast page. And as and when we know we can go live, we will schedule them in. But they might be a little bit more hectic on their timings. In terms of when those live streams are. So all you've got to do is follow recast.tv/behindtheglass and you can check out when those live streams might be happening.
Admin done?
I think so. I just got back from Bulgaria though, so I haven't been sitting still because I just dropped Vicky and the baby off there. They're hanging out there whilst I go on these crazy adventures. And whilst I was there, I did the usual thing of falling in love with blacked out Audi A8 and BMW 7 Series.
Because every other car.
It feels like. Yeah, because that in Bulgaria, and it might sound like a generalization, but it's not, they are just obsessed with Audis, BMWs and Mercs. Yeah. And I think more so BMWs and Mercs, and Bulgarian viewers or listeners, correct me because I know there's a ton of you. Audi, I feel like, is in third place there, but not when it comes to the limousine format. Like the amount of new, like brand new A8 Ls or S8s that I see, every time I go, oh God, I want one of those. They just look really good there. Nowhere else in the world do I ever want a big limousine, BMW or Audi, even an S-Class, except when I'm in Bulgaria.
Right.
Do those cars do anything for you?
Well, I saw one the other day, actually. You don't see loads and loads of them, but I saw one the other day. And I'm not being stereotypical.
That's right. You can go with that.
Yeah.
Let's see what you say after.
The driver did look of Bulgarian, Albanian type.
And, I'm feeling a bit attacked.
No, don't feel attacked. But it really suited him. And I thought, actually, that is a car for you. Like, that's like, I'd look stupid in that car.
You would. I would as well. I think I'd look all right in the back.
It's a thug's car.
Is it?
Yes.
Are you saying all Bulgarians and Albanians are...
No, but like, they look like proper men, don't they? Like,
yes.
You know what I mean? Like all Eastern European men, like we're all like wussies.
We're pansies.
In general, English men, like there's some, Tyson Fury's a proper man, but there's a few, all right. But all European, Eastern European men, they look like they're going to rip your head off.
Yeah, if I had an insecurity in my marriage, it's that there's always a question of me thinking, does Vicky actually, would she have preferred to be with a Bulgarian man?
To look after her.
Whenever I go, I get man crushes on the Bulgarian, because they are just that, like often strong, silent types.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, big, but.
Yeah.
Always super nice.
Very nice people.
I often find about, this is Bulgarians, I don't have as good experience of meeting other people from that part of the world. They are really cuddly bears, as in like they might come across like they're going to kill you, but they are the sweetest people. I love the Bulgarians that I know are amazing people. But yeah, I am not that. I'm a little effeminate, a pretty camp, over the top, you know.
Really awkward.
I launch in going, hello. I'd love a flat white. And they just go,
can
your...
I have some oat milk with that, please?
Literally, yeah. Bang, there's your coffee. Yeah. So, yeah, I would suit the back of an S-Class AA 7 Series.
Yeah.
I think you're right that maybe you wouldn't suit either the front or the back.
Me, no.
But I disagree that you have to be thuggish to drive. I think it's a chauffeur vehicle, right? Like, most places around the world, if you see those cars, they're being driven by chauffeurs. It's very rare that people buy, I think, limousines, A8s, 7 Series, S-Class, or even like a Bentley Flying Spur, and they're driving it themselves.
Yeah, I probably should have been a little bit more specific in what I was trying to say. This was a 2014 car.
So yes, an older generation.
An older generation car, huge bang for your buck. And I think that's what them people like. They just think, you
them
know.
People, now we're crying.
No.
Now we're wading into a
we're
little...
not wading. It's just that I'm trying to describe them.
Anytime you say them people, it gets me a little nervous on the legalities of this podcast. So let's steer away from the them people okay. phrase. But yeah, I get what you're trying to say. There's definitely a stereotype for the older limousine. What other cars do you think have... Do you think BMWs in general still have that stereotype of bumper huggers?
No, Audi now.
Yeah, I think it's moved away, hasn't it? Audi, yeah. And then I would say Range Rovers for being fast lane hoggers.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, yeah.
Ferrari owners for being sweatshirt over the shoulders. Like, you know what I mean?
No, I think that's very old, like Top Gear. I think that's, you know... But people do still, you know, if you drive a Ferrari, the general public will spit at you.
they will yeah. spit at you. But come on, because there are quite a few stereotypical owners. We talk about Lambo owners a lot.
Yeah, yeah. Porsche owners, the same.
Do you think there's a stereotypical Porsche owner?
Yeah, yeah. Honestly.
What is it?
They're just weird. mate, honestly, like Porsche buyers, and I can say this from experience, are the worst to deal with when you're trying to sell them a car.
You know, you are a Porsche customer as
Yeah, I do. And I'm like the complete opposite because of my job, I just go, yeah, I'll have it. And I'm a big Porsche customer, but in general, especially older Porsches, I mean, they lay on the floor and look at the nuts and bolts.
Yes.
Yes.
But I will also just call you up and pull you up on something because I have heard you buying a car and you do not go, all right, mate, yeah, I'll take that one.
Yes, I do.
You go, be like that. All right, mate, that car, I'll give you 50 grand under, and I'm not budging because I know the price. Okay, leave it. See you, mate. I've heard you bully salespeople because you are just a machine, like a bull. You are a bull in a china shop when it comes to, it's terrifying, like negotiating.
Yeah, but hold on a minute. I mean, I think most people that own businesses like that, not just in the car business. I think if you're in sales, you have to be assertive.
Absolutely. But
yeah, and confident in what you think you know. And because if you have someone try and tell you your job, you're weak.
Hey, I'm not saying it's bad, but I'm just saying don't pretend like you are like this super straightforward. You just walk in, you just pay and you leave. Like,
I am.
No, you're not. You, okay, so I can ask you this as a salesperson, but I don't think you'll tell me the true answer. Would you prefer someone to come in and ask you 10 questions about the age of the tires, the tread depth, when the oil was last filled up, the service history, etc., or 10 times tell you that they're going to pay 5 grand under your asking price and not budge?
They wouldn't tell me 10 times. They'd tell me once and I'd say no and say, sorry, that's that. So that's the end of conversation. So that's the worst analogy I've ever come across.
Well,
would I prefer someone to ask me 10 million questions about a car, or would I prefer someone to come in and say, yeah, thanks for that, Tony. It's a really lovely car. I'll have it. What do you think?
But that's not what you do. You go, that's a really lovely car. I'll have it, but for less than you want, and I'm not going to budge. You can tell me all that crap. And the guy goes, oh, but Tony, it does have... I know it has bows. I don't care. that doesn't add any value. I've heard you on the phone. Poor salesman going, yeah, but we have actually done a PPF. I don't care, I can get a PPF done for free. It means nothing to me.
No, you just ruined
them.
No, that you're exaggerating, mate. I think you'll find many people have dealt with me on YouTube and they will vouch for me. I'm sure you'll vouch for me, right?
If you have sold Tony a car, please write to us at btg@cgglass.com and let us know what an awful experience it was. You're now in therapy. Anyway, one other car that I always see in Bulgaria that always gets me excited is the G-Wagon. Now, I've spoken about this a little bit previously.
The old G-Wagon or a new one?
No, well, both, but new one. That I had like a weird dream. I can't even remember how long, maybe 6 or 9 months ago, that I owned a G-Wagon. And I woke up going, that was kind of cool. Like a car that I'd never really ever wanted to own in my life. But
you genuinely wouldn't suit a G-Wagon.
Well, I think I would suit the 500,000th limited edition G-Wagon. Did you see this?
No.
So to celebrate the 500,000th G-Wagon ever produced.
500,000?
Yeah.
Half a million
of them, dude.
Wow.
If you go to Dubai, there are just literally...
There's 500,000 there.
Literally.
Yeah.
Often unsold. I mean, they're just like car parks full of G-Wagons.
Yeah, yeah.
They went back and they celebrated, I think it was a 1986. It's the iconic sort of green car, the older sort of chassis or older body.
I saw you post this.
Yeah, beautiful looking thing. They've done it so well and it's sort of real attention to detail. It looked absolutely stunning, I think. Clear glass, orange reflectors. It's just, I was like obsessed with the thing. It's not going to go for sale. It's like the Porsche's 1,000,000th 911. It's just a sort of celebration. It's not a car to go for sale. But the minute I saw it, I went, well, I want a G-Wagon. I'm just going to recreate it. Like that's amazing. A classy G-Wagon.
So they've literally built a car and said, here we go, guys. There's a car, but you can't have it.
No. It's going in the museum. It's just a celebratory half a million. Same as the 911. That 1,000,000th 911 sits in the Porsche Museum. Super cool. It was a way to hark back to the originality. It's them celebrating themselves and boom, bish, bash, bosh. But it did just suddenly show that actually, if you don't spec a G-Wagon, black with black and black and black and black and black and tint the windows, actually, they can still look pretty nice. They don't have to look like rappers... music video props.
But the new one has to be black murdered.
No.
I think the older one does suit them different colours and all that. But the newer one does, I think, needs to be blue or black.
No, proof is in the window of that 500,000th car. It's stunning. Like, it's like a really classic look. Hey,
it's an old car. It's not a new car.
No, mate. I'm going to bring it up. It's the new car done to look like the old car.
Oh, right. Is it?
Yeah. So this is the brand new 500. I think it's 500D. So that's the new shape car, mate. All they've done is put a classic paint.
Well, it looks really old.
But that's the whole thing. That's the whole point. Like, it's supposed to. It's supposed to, mate. They've even put a canvas cover on the rear wheel rather than that metallic one.
Maybe they just got a load of that paint they want to sell, so they bring it out so everyone specs them in that paint.
I would do it. If they said that they're launching paint as a celebration.
You got one, Merc.
But
it's one here, look. You got one.
It worked.
How much is the car?
Honestly, if they did a heritage pack, a heritage livery or something like that for G-Wagon, okay, there wasn't this, but at least you could have it in a classier spec. I'm so there. I am so there. And actually, the reason I wanted to mention it is because when I did the video on Sunday
previously.
The video that went out 2 months ago, but my trip to Italy to drive the LM002 and the Urus Performante, I mentioned that I thought the Urus was really such an incredible success story for Lamborghini. And could you think of another vehicle that has been as successful for a manufacturer? And the G-Wagon has got to be seen as one of those because...
Of course.
Oh my God, the values. Again, I'm really focusing on values, but those cars still, I don't know if they're trading over list, but they retain their value so well.
Yeah, because they keep putting the prices up, by the way. Keep putting the new prices up of them.
Okay, and that...
Over the last 2 or 3 years, they've gone through the roof in terms of new.
And that keeps the values of the used vehicles strong?
Yes, what Porsche do very well, and Ferrari, to be fair.
What, every 18 months or 2 years, up the price again?
Put the price up, yeah. Because it's, values.
If you look on the used market, G-Wagons, even G500, G400s, all the AMG stuff, yeah, just still all the money.
Well, they will be, yeah.
And Delivery time, are they hard to get hold of?
Well, not on the used market. There's millions of them.
But as a new car, because what I'm saying is, like, surely that's a kind of no-brainer thing. Because I was sitting there being like, well, I can't justify spending 150 grand on a Mercedes G-Wagon. Like, as you say, it's not really my car. And like, I'm only getting one if I can spec it like this. But then I'm like, well, hold on a second. It makes a load of sense if I can buy it for 150 grand, use it for 18 months, and sell it for 150 grand. Well, there you go. That makes way more sense than my X3 that I'm losing 5 grand on.
They're not 150 grand anymore.
Well,
probably 175 now, at least.
Let's fact check ourselves before we chat.
Well, they used to be 150. I think they used to be 140-odd grand. But the 63, the big Larry one.
I don't want the big Larry one.
Oh.
I want the diesel. From 127, that's going to be the diesel, isn't it? G-Class price. Where's actual, I mean that, here's the word, leasing and prices. G-Class.
I mean, that's a lot of money, mate. 127 grand.
There you go.
Grand.
G63 is 181 grand. Oh, no, that's the carbon edition. G63, 174 grand.
I told you.
And the diesel's 130.
130 for yeah. a rattly old yeah. diesel?
Yeah. That's what I'm saying, mate. It's insane.
Yeah. I mean, I genuinely remember that long ago that they were about 100 grand.
When did they come out? 2018,
you're right.
Let's see if we can find what the original price was.
I think the G63 was about 140-odd grand list.
I think you're right, but I'm just trying to see if we can find an actual
back
article.
Back then.
More research I should have done prior to recording, but... well, yeah, I mean, fine. They've gone up in price.
They've gone up a fortune.
Yeah.
But that's why they've gone up on the used market as well.
And that, but as I say, if they're holding, okay, I don't want to spend 170 grand on this, insane, but 130 grand on the diesel spec'd up, that's what, 145 probably?
Probably, yeah.
Mercedes pricing bad? Like, the options?
Well, I don't think there's low, there's definitely not on the 63. You can have that manufacturer pack, whatever it's called. Which you've got to have, I think, on them. But apart from that, there's only a couple of other options you can have.
Okay, so let's say it's 145 grand car. I mean, you probably aren't going to, you're going to lose like 10 grand after a year like that on a diesel?
Oh, maybe.
I mean,
no, you'd lose more than that if you're selling it to a dealer.
I don't know. I'm just going like, oh, hold on a second. I'm suddenly able to justify buying a G-Wagon.
But like, why? What do you want it, what do you want a G-Wagon for? You just
cool.
like the look of it.
It's cool, isn't it?
But hold on a minute. Aren't you a JLR Land Rover customer?
Defender, but the problem is they don't...
They do a heritage one.
I'm all over it, but we've discussed this a million times over, 90 versus 110.
Half the money.
The 110 is bigger than the G-Wagon, I would say.
No.
Yeah, I think the 110's bigger.
It might be a bit longer.
Longer, yeah.
I bet it's not bigger.
Yeah, it's got to be close, hasn't it?
Well, it might be a bit longer. I don't think it's a bigger car. I mean, they're big, the old G-Wagon. It's a big old bus.
It's a big car, isn't it?
Yeah. And frightening with a... I mean, they are loads better than the old car, the 63, you know, the big one. But it is still frightening, mate, because it is quite fast.
Yeah, and I go in on people who go like, it's so much better, but it's still a bit crap.
Yeah.
You know, it's still a bit... You know who has a really nice G-Wagon?
Who?
Molly May.
What colour is it?
Brown.
Oh, I've seen that.
With a wood interior.
I mean, literally. I've seen that.
I said to Vicky, like, hey, if I hadn't met you,
brown,
I'd be all over Molly May right now, sliding in those DMs.
Yeah. I'm sure Tommy Fury would give you a good hiding.
Brown G-Wagon with wooden trim. I was like, Molly May, where have you been all my life? Okay, well, yeah, I'm obviously not going to get a G-Wagon, but...
get anywhere near Molly May.
No, I don't want to try. I mean, I just want her car. I mean, to be honest, she's not winning my type, but I'm really into her choices in vehicles. Anyway, let's move on. You did actually mention something there which I wanted to pick up on, which is in general car values, right? Because Porsche increasing their prices
again, by the way,
again.
No, as in over the last 2 or 3 years, all they've done.
Yeah, well, but
I mean, they all have, to be fair.
Whether it is manufacturers upping the price of an existing model or cars coming out and inherently being way more expensive than their model they're replacing, it just feels like in general new cars are becoming more and more expensive.
Oh, they are. Yeah,
why?
I think mainly because they're not making the numbers they were. So you don't get the discounts you used to get, because obviously there was millions of them in a field, and you'd walk into these, especially the German brands, you'd walk in and they'd say, how many do you want and how much discount do you want? Whereas now, you might get a little bit on certain cars, but it's nowhere near the 15% and the 10% that you used to get. You might get like 3% or 5%. As a punter, I'm talking about, as a retail punter, you'll get the odd one. But don't forget, like I've said to you all before, buying a car on discount isn't always good, because you're all retail punters. And if you're getting 10% off, so is everyone else. So it's not cheap, if you see what I mean. So now I think what they're doing now, these manufacturers, they're making less cars, making the same amount of money, because they're not murdering them away. And that will be partly because there's still a parts problem. It's getting better, but there is still a supply problem.
Okay, so a few questions off the back of that. So do you think, therefore, if that's what you believe, do you think that there'll be a price correction in the future?
Up or down?
Down. As in, if they are upping their prices because, yeah, they're making less cars, or they're not able to make as many cars, once supply returns, part supply returns to normal, and they're able to up their production to normal numbers, do they then go, hey guys, the new GT3 is $5,000 less?
Well, I mean, no, not the GT3 is a bad example, but mass produced cars, and this is what we've all got to be a bit careful of. And who knows what these manufacturers are up to, because they change their mind, you know, like we drink water. You know, they literally change their mind every other week on what path they're going down and how they're going to do things and what they're going to do next week. From a used car retailer and from a punter point of view, you better hope they don't. Because if they decide to make loads and loads and loads and loads of cars again and do these huge discounts like they used to do, your cars are all going to have huge correction. Everyone that's in a car, used car, will have a huge, because it's got to be. Because it's always come from the top, and it always will do. It'll come from new car prices and then it filters down. So, and then you have the supply and demand bit. Because everything is the supply and demand. Every industry works on supply and demand. So if the supply outweighs the demand, prices go down. If it's the other way round, prices go up. Obviously, that's a common. It's the same with trainers. It's the same with anything you get your hands on. If there's less of something, it's worth more than there is if there's more of something.
So, but has that historically happened, that new car prices have gone down?
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together.
J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Well, it depends on what they're chasing. The problem is they've got to be, especially with combustion cars now, when we see in these manufacturers, a lot of them are still pounding the electric drum, mm-hmm. as in, you know, mm-hmm. so they're phasing combustion cars out, apparently. So maybe they're not going to go back to that tactic. Maybe that's why electric cars are the prices there are. And maybe what we are going to see is electric car prices coming down. Maybe combustion car prices will go up or stay the same, and it will be the electric cars that come down because they're too expensive as a new car.
And also that's a good or an easy PR story, right? So it's harder, I think, or it'd be sort of more complicated. Take the Range Rover Sport, right? Range Rover Sport inherently more expensive this generation of Range Rover Sport.
Every generation.
Fine. So, but it has taken a big hike up for this particular generation.
But has it? In terms of percentages, it probably hasn't done any more than the previous one. But the problem is we're talking about another load of money compared to the previous car. So the percentages are probably the same, but the actual increase in money is more because the product's more in the first place.
Fine. Okay. My point being, it's hard for the next generation Range Rover Sport, if this one is 100 grand, to suddenly come out and go, right, the new Range Rover Sport from 85 grand. You'd be like, why is it cheap? Do you not think that's harder than a good PR story, which is introducing cheaper and more affordable EVs? Because that's a positive PR story. If Mercedes come out with a new GLE, that can do 500 miles and it costs from just £27,000, that's a great story, rather than the confusion or complication of making a product cheaper suddenly.
But that will be the story, mate, because that's the only reason why they're going to sell cars. And obviously there needs to be, at some point, if everyone's going to go EV or the governments want people to go EV, there will need to be some sort of incentivization to buy a used one, because at the moment there isn't any. There's nothing. And if that's what they want, everyone's buying new ones for tax reasons, if you're a company owner or if you're
leasing
or if you're a company car driver, obviously for tax reasons that's more beneficial that you go into a new one. But when on the used market then benefits change. They're not the same as when you buy the new one. So there are still benefits, but the benefits are greater when they're new, obviously, when they're brand spanking new. So I've always said I think that the electric car market should be cheaper than combustion cars for it to work, because, like we've said before, they're a worse product. And I think that this is probably the market that they're going down now, where they're slowly increasing combustion cars, mainly... Because don't forget, all of these brands, they've all got huge networks within all the countries they represent, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So if they suddenly come out, and you use a Range Rover Sport as an example, if they suddenly come out and say, the new Range Rover Sport is 85 grand, they're basically shafting their whole used car network as well, that they all partly own and partly fund. So... that would be stupid of them to do that, obviously, because they're going to ruin their network. So I don't think they're going to do that for that reason, because behind the scenes, as we always like to say, there's so much money involved rolling around that the manufacturers support, even on used level. All right, it's an internal funding system, but they're still supporting it. That would go pop, basically.
Well, first things first, I think we have to and we can stop saying that EVs are an inferior product. I think we've agreed for quite a while that the EVs are...
I didn't mean it like that.
Sure, inferior choice in your mind. Yeah, inferior choice in your mind. But yeah, I mean, I think basically what you're trying to say, or the simple answer is, are car prices, new car prices going to increase, continue to increase for combustion engine vehicles? We think so, yes. Like that, we're just going to continue to see new combustion engine cars become more and more expensive. You know, the Revuelto supposedly going to be £500,000.
the 450, I heard, but yeah.
Sure. Well, yeah, you know, yeah, close out like €500,000.
Yeah.
The 812 replacement, similar. The next generation Aston Martin, €200,000 or whatever. Like, you know, so everything, Maserati MC20, like everything's just,
well, let's take
McLaren Artura, like,
yeah,
everything is just becoming more expensive.
Well, let's look at the TDF. That was like 400, 450 spec, and the competition is $200,000 more.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's a supercar level, but yeah, even if you come and filter down to things like RS3s or mid-level SUVs, you know, a 3-series wagon at $65,000 for the hot one, you know. I mean, it's everything is more expensive combustion engine-wise.
That is an absolute piss take, by the way. It's just dawned on me, this. Ferrari charging the money that they charge for that competizione. I mean, it's just...
But they can.
Of course, but it's just a rebodied 812 with some more power. And, I mean, the markup they've got in that car in terms of the prop... I mean...
I don't want to go into this again because annoyed me,
it doesn't annoy you, but it fascinates me that you can't sit here and tell me, and no one can sit here and tell me this, that an 812 Superfast is really any more to make than a Competizione. We're talking about a round of drinks, how much more it is to make. And the markup they've got on that car is incredible.
The reason this topic frustrates me is that there's...
You don't know the answers.
There's simply not a way to find out the answer without a whistleblower. But there's different conversations happening here. Thanks to a lot of our viewers and listeners, off the back of an episode we did a few weeks ago now, where Tony spoke about production, manufacturer production profits, we know the overall profit per vehicle percentage for all the manufacturers. It's been published, it's been looked at, and Ferrari are one of the best, with usually about a 25% profit margin in each car that they make.
Incredible.
But that is all costs. So that is literally the
that's their profit.
That's their profit, their final profit. Yeah. But the point you were making a few weeks ago is that the actual manufacturing process, the sort of production element, is a lot less than you think. So in that breakdown of very rough numbers, if a car costs $100 million to produce, the actual manufacturing production element of that will be very far down that
pennies
cost chain.
Yeah,
you know, research and development, marketing, compliance, you know, testing and
R&D.
Those will be the majority of those,
and the production line
costs. So yeah, I have no idea for an 812 Competizione how much R&D time, how much design, how much aero, how much testing, how much blah blah is required, but you've got to think, because they're taking an existing model and tweaking it, it's far less than the existing model.
Yeah, it's a round of drinks, mate.
And Ferrari just did, because, you know, put a limited number on it.
They're all at it.
And if the TDF sold on the used market immediately for €1 million, why on earth wouldn't we price its successor at $750,000?
Yeah,
like, it makes sense.
But they're all at it. Not
yeah,
just Ferrari,
yeah, of course.
They're all at it, just in different numbers.
The thing that I thought was ludicrous... So, talking about, you know, increased pricing, blah, blah, did you see the new Cayenne that just got launched?
Mm. Taycan inside.
Okay. Mainly new interior. From the outside, it looks very similar, but mainly new interior. And then slightly different powertrains and things like that, weren't there? I need to actually do a little bit more research.
There was a V8 in the S.
Yeah, I need to look exactly the breakdown. Is that coming to the UK, though?
I believe.
Okay. But
cool.
I went online to spec one up. The amount of options available for the Cayenne is sickening.
15% price hike Porsche have done on all options. 15%.
So you've got a more expensive vehicle with more expensive options.
Yeah.
And as I say, if you go on the Porsche configurator and sit down, I should actually have looked.
Oh, you've got to sit down.
Mate, it goes on forever. Ever.
Yeah.
So you're starting with your, you know, whatever it is, $80,000 Cayenne S or whatever. You are at an over $100,000 in the blink of an eye.
Genius.
It is genius,
yeah,
like absolute genius, but mind-boggling and shocking.
Yeah.
And I actually think Porsche are becoming the worst at it.
So they're earning money.
Sure, But as you just said, when we're talking about the G-Wagon, you know, Mercedes and many of other of the German manufacturers now offer these packs or simplify things so that the options are grouped together. It's very hard to literally just go through and tick and add. Well, with Porsche, it's just infinite and endless.
Well, the three big German brands, Merck, Audi, and BMW, that's what they do. They offer packs. But Porsche don't offer packs, same as Ferrari. You don't get packs, same as Lamborghini. You do get some packs, actually, with Lamborghini, but
there's nowhere near, sorry to interrupt you, there's nowhere near as many options
of course
for Porsche, Lamborghini, as Porsche offer.
No.
Sorry, for Ferrari, Lamborghini, offer. I think they must be one manufacturer with the most options available for any vehicle.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah, because most of them don't do it like that now. They offer like packs.
Yeah, exactly what I'm saying. I'm actually going to bring up the configurator now because it is just so insane.
I mean, it's literally like printing money.
It's, as you said, it's genius. But
it's genius.
So the cheapest new Cayenne is just the base Cayenne. It's starting at, in the UK, £67,400. That's the bog standard Cayenne. So you think,
three-litre car.
That's not too bad.
It's got steering wheel.
And you can have it for zero, for cost-free, white or black. But the minute you want a colour, the cheapest colours are £900. Or you can go up to the special colours, which are £2,000. Yeah. So let's go with a nice blue, a standard blue. For
a nice blue.
For £900. Why not?
Blue, we call that.
Now, wheels, your standard equipment wheels are 20-inch wheel.
No, you want 22s on that.
Well, firstly, just to change to another 20-inch wheel is either £400 or £700.
No.
But you're right, you can go up to a 21-inch and you can go all the way up to a 22-inch.
Yeah.
Now, I know you're going to want a 22-inch, but this is just a Cayenne. It's not a Cayenne. So let's say we're playing a little bit sensible. We're going to go for a 21-inch. So I'm going to go this one. It's a £2,000 21-inch wheel. Nothing spectacular, but something that my mum or dad might like. Moving on, we get into the interiors. You have a standard partial leather black interior. If you want to change anything, you've got to pay £140 to add a bit of beige.
Cheap.
Not to
£140's cheap.
Yeah, that's cheap. Just to add a little bit of beige. I don't think to the seats. But the minute you want full leather, £2,500 or £3,000. The minute you want full leather.
It's cheap.
No, mate. Come on. £3,000. So let's say that we don't want to do that.
Yeah.
Because we're tight asses.
Yeah.
But I think not full leather, I'm already upset.
Yeah.
And then we're going to go comfort seats are standard. If you want to add in the 14-way electric, that's £800.
Right.
Adaptive sports seats are £1,000. And then you can go heated seats, ventilated seats front and rear, massage function front and rear. That's all £1,000 or £2,000.
Lovely.
Going on, you then get into the exterior options, exterior packages. You can have three different exterior packages ranging from £1,000 up to £6,000 for the carbon design pack.
That's
then
a
you
waste
have
of money.
Other things like the stainless steel skid pan for £800. You can change the wing mirrors. I mean, there's about 10 different options there to do with wing mirrors and door handles. And the fuel filler cap. Roof transportation system. You've got three different options there for roof rails or
pan roof.
You've got various decals, endless decals, about 15 options for decals. For your powertrain, you can do rear axle steer. You've got adaptive air suspension, Porsche Dynamic Chassis Control, Sports Chrono, four different options for tailpipes, Power Steering Plus. The brake caliper's being painted in black. It's going to cost you £640. Then you've got options for the lights, £2,000 for LED lights. You've got a heated windscreen. Again, you've got about another 10 options there before you move on to the interior. Interior now, we can do various different stitching. We've got about 14 different colour options for stitching. We've got a carbon interior package for £1,300. Extended trim package, again, 12 or 15 options there. Seat belts. Going through, we've got six options for different seat belt colourings. We've got steering. I mean, you get the idea. You get the gist.
Do you want me to help you?
No.
No, what I'm saying is that I could spec that car in 25 seconds.
What would you do?
I'd put different wheels on it, put a pan roof on it, make sure it's got camera and Bose, privacy glass, that'd do.
And not get caught up in it.
No, nope. That's enough.
You're probably right. You probably just go,
right.
No, ignore. But it is overwhelming. And I guess that's one way that, just new cars are just getting more.
One way to lose your
more
money.
More and more expensive. Yeah, for sure. Because of course you're not getting that back. On a Cayenne, It's different. I think 911s are very spec dependent, aren't they?
Not the normal ones, though. Again, like, you haven't got to go mad on a normal. On a GT car or even maybe a Turbo S, something a little bit more special, then, yeah, you can be a bit more adventurous. But on a normal mass-produced car, a 911, just stick to wheels, stereo, rear camera, maybe the PDSL headlights, or the normal ones are just about fine, and put a roof on it. That's enough.
Fair enough. Recently, did you see the kind of soft launch or the secretive launch for something called Kahuna?
Yeah.
So, blasted all over Instagram, this kind of amazing, like, open museum of a load of different dealers here in the UK. I think DK Engineering, Joe Macari. I'm not sure who else I saw was there, but a handful of bringing proper stuff, Chirons, MC20s, amazing Porsches, like incredible stuff, to a warehouse that they sort of opened as a museum for the weekend, and it was to launch this new platform. I need to find out more, but I understand it to kind of be a new, I think, an online auction platform, but with reputed dealers. So you kind of know where the cars are coming from.
Mm-hmm.
It's also that they can do trade auctions or trade, because you do that, right? So there's a behind the scenes, there's kind of a trade bidding site, so you can bid on cars that come through the trade.
There's so many different ways for us to buy cars as dealers now, but yeah, there's more than one, actually, trade to trade sites, essentially.
Fine. So I guess that they're going to operate in that space as well. But what it made me think or realize is just how popular online car auction sites have become the last few years.
Since COVID,
really?
Yeah.
I mean, Doug DeMuro and his Cars and Bids site, I mean, he got that huge chunk of investment that allowed him to go and buy that Carrera GT. Obviously, kind of the original, Bring a Trailer is the one in America.
Yeah.
Obviously, collecting cars here in the UK and further afield, of course, they operate everywhere now. But we're seeing traditional auction houses now move into this space too. So from your side, why do you think they've become so popular, and is it a threat to you? Like, does that worry you that now there's such popularity in these online auction sites?
No, it's not a threat to me at all. No, I don't think it's a threat to the market. It's just people trying to come up with different ideas. It's all digital now. That's the way the world is going. And actually, since COVID, I mean, we used to do it before, but as a retailer, since COVID, it's been accelerated that we don't see half the people we buy cars, that we sell cars to now. Everyone buys them online. So, you know, the first time we see half the people, and it is really like half the people that we actually sell cars to, the first time we meet them is when we deliver the car to their house. So we're in a digital age now, mate. This is the way of it. And it's all about time. Contrary to what everyone thinks, dealers are busy doing... We've got so many compliance rules now and admin stuff that we all have to do and loads of different chores that not just business owners, but just in general that we all have to do. You ain't got time to go to auctions anymore. I mean, the big traditional auctions, BCA and Mannheim, they're all online now. And they have been for years, but even more so online. And when COVID was around, you couldn't physically go down to bid on a car. I mean, I don't go to auctions. I've never bought a car from an auction. Luckily, I don't have to.
You have bought them from Collecting Cars, though?
I bought two cars from Collecting Cars in COVID. Yeah, I did, yeah. Yeah, but these were from private individuals that I could reject if I wanted, by the way. So once you buy a car, if you're a dealer and you buy a car from an auction, they've been described, and that's that. You take them and... it's your problem, basically. Whereas when you buy from somewhere like Collecting Cars, if it's been misdescribed and it's not what you'd expect, you don't buy the car. So it's the same with a lot of you would have seen Motorway, which is another new way over the last few years for dealers to buy cars. It's for normal punters. It's a way for them to sell their cars and dealers bid on them, and you know, there's an auction every day, basically. It's the same thing. If you get there and they're misdescribed, you don't buy the car. So,
and maybe that's what Kahuna, for example, are trying to eliminate is that there's more of a trust in the product that you're bidding on. But from my point of view, the thing that collecting cars has done is, as an enthusiast, and Car and Classic do the same thing, it's a better or more intriguing shopping place than Auto Trader. So Auto Trader, with its however many 100,000 cars they often have on that site?
500,000
cars.
400,000, yeah.
I've kind of got to know what I'm looking for or looking at. You know, I'm going in to look at a specific car and then I'll see what's available. Whereas I can pop on collecting cars and have a bit of a browse and think, oh, God, I'd love one of those. And I thought, well, that's nice. No, I'm going to keep an eye on that when that comes up to auction. And maybe it's not something that I would have gone out to look to buy, but because I see it, I'm like, oh, that looks lovely. And these online auction sites or online listing masses, that's not a word, but you know what I mean? Like, is that not an area where you're getting more competition for eyes on stock? As in, are people coming to your listings as much as they did, or are they being distracted by these new sites that are offering juicier stuff? Do you see what I'm saying?
Well, it depends on what market you're in. I mean, collecting cars, as far as I'm concerned, is quite niche. It's not for the mass market.
Fair. I totally agreed.
Auto Trader is for everyone. Mm-hmm. And the biggest advertiser in the country by a mile. It's not even close. And to let you all in on a little secret, it's how most dealers in the country price their cars up.
Yeah. They'll look at the pricings on Auto Trader.
And work back their margin from that. I mean, most good dealers know what a car's worth anyway, or have a very, very good idea, and they won't be far away by knowing what's in their head. Obviously, if they do similar stuff every day, they know what they're worth because they know what they can sell them for.
But exactly.
No. But Auto Trader, it for us is quite a good barometer of what they're advertised for, but that doesn't mean that's what they're worth. It's what they're advertised for, and what they sell for are two different things, which is another reason why we have a margin, because otherwise we wouldn't make any money, would we? So collecting cars and all these other online platforms, and I like what collecting cars have done. The lads there, they've done a fantastic job. I've had dealings with them before. I've bought cars from there. I've spoke about selling cars from there. From my point of view as a retailer, it doesn't make any sense for me to sell a car on there because there's so many other things involved in my job which makes more sense for me to sell the car myself, as in finance, part exchange, warranties. I can earn money off all of them products, whereas if I just bin a car off in the auction, well, not going to earn anything. I'm just going to get my money back. What's the point in that?
For sure. And I guess a big part of your business is trust, right? It's trust with the customer has with you and you have in the put. So they know that they're getting something from somebody reputable.
Well, by the way, this is the big reason why I do what I do. Mm. I do like doing this. Obviously, I wouldn't do it if I didn't. And to some people say that I don't like cars anymore. I do like cars. Sometimes I can be a bit unenthusiastic about them because it's my job and I'm saturated with cars all the while. My whole life is cars. 20 hours a day, I'm on the phone talking about cars. So sometimes I feel I'm less enthusiastic because I live and breathe it, mate. But in terms of trust and building a brand, it's the big reason why I'm on social media, because it really helps with the recognition of the whole brand, knowing that people feel more confident knowing that they buy a car from me because I'm on the telly.
Oh, don't get ahead of yourself. Not quite yet, mate.
But some people on the telly.
Yeah, no. But I mean, I guess that's what, yeah, Kahuna, I suppose, are trying. We'll watch the space because they're obviously making a lot of noise and doing interesting things. So excited
to see.
Fair
play to them for having a go.
Absolutely. Yeah. The other thing that I thought was interesting, which is, I guess is similar and branched across, so Custodian Legends, they've got one of their lovely caps on there. Table, because I love their hats.
This one?
Yeah.
Do you want me to point as well?
No, you're right. they're about to launch, I think it's called The Showroom.
Yeah.
Which essentially, so I've spoken about Custodian before because I use it a lot for my 360, also put the GT3 on there. It's the best way to manage your garage digitally. You can upload all your history files and create reminders for yourself to get things done and put in events and all the stuff like that, so you can just beautifully manage your garage. But the benefit then being that you can kind of almost share that information, or a dealer could share that information onto the next buyer. So, so I think they're going to, you know, loop together. They've got various dealers that they're already sort of signed up to, so that you're going to have that trust in place. But also, it just enhances the buying process. They, you know, they already do anything so great. So I'm excited to see what they do as well. So there's a lot happening within this digital car buying, selling space.
Yeah.
And lots of different people doing lots of different things. But I think fundamentally, it makes sense to be sort of leaning on that trust that a reputed dealer has already.
Yeah. I mean, the good thing about an auctions as well is generally people get carried away on auctions. So, but really, normally, apart from the buyer and the seller, the other person that makes money is the auctioneer, obviously,
because that's how
they've got to earn a living. So there's always fees involved either side, whether it comes from the buyer or the seller. There's always got to be fees involved. So it's not always what you see, the headline figure, oh, that car sold for that, because there's always fees involved. And quite often, it's a few quid, by the way, because it's always a percentage. It's not like a flat fee. It's a percentage of what the car sells for. So... And it's another big reason why I don't buy cars from auction myself personally, in general, because the fees makes the car too expensive.
Fair. Well, it's been interesting to see, and I think we're going to see more and more people come into the space, because there's clearly money to be made when you're seeing, like I say, Doug DeMura getting the kind of investment that he is and the success of collecting cars, etc. So we'll watch this space. But anyway, that kind of wraps up this episode, this latest episode. I hope you've all enjoyed it. So we did record it a little bit in advance, but hopefully nothing we spoke about is massively out of date. We will be back with you for another episode next week, which again will be pre-recorded. But for now, if you want to follow us on our adventures wherever we are in the world, Tony's at Tony Gravelwood Car Sales on most social media platforms. I'm at Seen Through Glass. And keep an eye, as I say, on recast.tv/behindtheglass to see when we'll be live streaming over the weeks ahead, because it's all going to be a little bit chaotic and it could be quite fun to join us. Maybe we'll do some, well, that Spanish one that we're going to be doing when I come and find you, we could have some beers. We could do it as like an evening one.
Get pissed
and do a Q&A on Recast, which is actually what we're going to be doing straight after this recording. So yes, thank you so much for tuning in, and we'll be back with you for another episode very soon. Bye-bye.
See ya.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.